Today on Annenberg Radio News.
The paintings are strong. These are works that a lover of paint goes to and you see and you say yes.
Listen to how one painter portrays early 20th century Chicago. Good afternoon and a very happy Diwali from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, October 23rd, 2014. I'm Priyanka Deo. Closing arguments began today in the Javier Bolden trial. Bolden is charged with first-degree murder, aiding and abetting the killing of two USC graduate students in 2012. Diana Crandall joins us live from the courthouse with the latest. Diana, what are the closing arguments from the defense and the prosecution?
So the prosecution argues that because two cell phones were stolen the night of the murder, it becomes a robbery at that point. And a robbery is a felony, and a murder took place. So even though there has already been a man convicted of murder, Brian Barnes, who actually pulled the trigger that killed the students, Javier Bolden is held equally responsible under a special circumstances law in that first-degree murder charge. So that's what the prosecution is arguing. Now, the defense attorney says that Bolden, when he confessed to law enforcement in 2012 that he was aiding and abetting in this murder, that he made up the story about how things happened that night because he was scared of the death penalty that was brought up by the detectives interrogating him.
All right. Can we expect a verdict today?
No, I'm not sure. Right now, we're still in deliberations. The prosecuting attorney is giving his final closing statements right now. After that, the jury will be given instructions on how the deliberations will proceed. And then, you know, it could be anywhere from an hour to a week before they get back with a verdict for Javier Bolden.
All right. Thanks, Diana.
Thank you.
Representatives of an 8-state partnership to support the market for zero-emission vehicles joined California's Air Resources Board in Diamond Bar on Thursday. The coalition announced that nationwide sales have surpassed the 250,000 mark with a goal of 3.3 million set. ARN's Jordan Plout reports.
That sound is the revving of Harley-Davidson's first electric motorcycle, one of the few amongst the cars, trucks, and buses at the Zero Emission Vehicle Showcase. The prototype, and others like it, is not for sale and is instead intended to gauge interest in a future product. For the majority of manufacturers here, such as Tesla, Nissan, and BMW, however, what you see is the real deal because the demand is real. Here's David Klagern, a representative of the Air Resources Board.
I think people are concerned about the environment, for one thing. The climate change issue is coming front and center. And cutting vehicle emissions is a very, very major piece of that puzzle.
Richard Hatfield is the CEO of Lightning, a motorcycle company based in San Carlos.
I've always been into motorcycles and have always been also very passionate about what we could do to use technology to reduce emissions, to reduce dependency on oil, and to make transportation more sustainable and cleaner.
Industry executives and manufacturers alike are celebrating higher sales, but affordability and availability in low-income areas is still a largely untouched concern. A recent Clean Vehicle Rebate Project survey shows that since zero-emission vehicle rebates and tax credits began, the overwhelming majority have been awarded to households earning $100,000 or more. Many of California's most polluted regions are also some of the poorest. Air Resources Board Chairman Mary Nichols and the 8-state coalition are, at least for the moment, focused on the growth and distribution of zero-emission vehicles.
This is proof that the auto industry is rising to the challenge and the opportunity to design, build, and deliver a wide array of ultra-clean, zero-emission vehicles for consumers. I want to congratulate the auto manufacturers. They have truly become partners in the fight to stabilize the climate and reduce air pollution.
For new zero-emission cars with ranges under 100 miles, the average price still hovers between $25,000 and $40,000. The prices go up as the ranges increase. Even with rebates and tax incentives, prices must go down for California to hit the 1.5 million vehicle mark in 10 years proposed by Governor Jerry Brown. Jordan Plout, Annenberg Radio News.
It is confirmed today that 7-year-old Jamarian Thomas was fatally stuck by an ice cream truck last night. Police say the boy was riding a motorized bike and holding a teddy bear, which have now become part of a candlelight memorial for him. After the incident, neighbors violently took their anger out on the truck driver, who sustained some minor injuries. The driver is currently being detained by police for his safety. The Los Angeles Fire Department will begin publishing emergency response times on its website once a month. Mayor Eric Garcetti and Fire Chief Ralph Terrazas announced today that the response times will be checked internally by LAFD and by two separate consultants. The fire department has faced questions about the accuracy of its reporting since admitting 2 years ago that they were releasing data showing firefighters were responding faster than they actually were. The city is also implementing a new service to collect data from the public about the fire department's performance. Ticket vendor giant Live Nation took its first step towards running the Greek Theater, one of LA's most well-known music venues. Nederlander Concerts has managed the Greek for 39 years, but today, the Los Angeles Board of Recreation and Parks decided to go another route. The board is backing Live Nation's bid, claiming it scored higher with park commissioners. If the contract is approved by city officials, Live Nation will take over the Greek starting in November. Today, several families will have a permanent roof over their head thanks to the opening of the Burlington Family Apartments. Mike Miranda is a father who has been bouncing from shelter to shelter with his 16-year-old daughter. He says the apartments are a real relief.
I'm looking forward to the journey, really. You know, what's coming next is just getting my feet back on the ground, getting myself in better health, and hopefully getting back to work.
The building comes with 30 units, and along with helping low-income families, the complex will house some people with severe mental illness. Today is a new groundbreaking of a new research center at USC. The USC Michelson Building will feature two medical labs that will accommodate nearly 50 researchers. Retired surgeon Gary Michelson gave $50 million to the new center in hopes it will produce research that is more applicable to everyday life.
It's all about the science, and for a very long time, I've been trying to convince people in the universities that they need to do science that will manifest in the real world, in the now, to help people.
USC President Max Nikias says the success of the new building will depend on the students.
It's going to bring together not only prominent scientists, but more importantly, it's going to bring together the students, because they're the ones that are going to drive this research with the faculty.
Nikias also mentions that the center will help combine different sciences like engineering and the cinematic arts. Licensed marijuana smokers will no longer have to leave the comfort of their homes to get their supply. The first mobile app for medical marijuana home delivery will soon be available in Los Angeles. Belinda Kai reports.
Nest Drop was created as a safe, quick way to get medical marijuana and alcohol delivered to your door in about an hour. Right now, the app is only available in Los Angeles for alcohol. The marijuana feature will be added within a few weeks, according to co-founder Roddy Radnia. USC senior Hank Rubenstein is an occasional smoker who definitely sees the appeal.
With Nest Drop's app, the medical marijuana feature is definitely most certainly convenient. For the user, as a casual smoker, is probably not the most energetic and aggressive person, and would definitely be less inclined to visit a store. Bringing the products right to their home is definitely going to be beneficial and most certainly kind of an innovative move in the medical marijuana industry.
Nest Drop uses doctor recommendations to categorize marijuana based on the relief it provides. It also works with local dispensaries to gain access to a variety of strains. The app is legal under California's medical marijuana laws, requiring a doctor's recommendation and identification card to be uploaded onto NestDrop. The app's founders hope to eventually expand the services beyond LA. Belinda Kai, Annenberg Radio News.
Looks like LA is going to have a string of perfect days all the way to the weekend. The rest of today will be sunny, cooling down to 64 degrees by nightfall. Friday will be the same as today, sunny with a high of 84 degrees. Saturday will reach 75 degrees with partly sunny skies, gradually cooling down to the low 60s at night. We'll end the weekend with a high of 72 and sunny on Sunday. Later on Annenberg Radio News, I speak with Dr. Nimi Gorinathan on her Women and War event tonight at USC. In North Hollywood, restaurants, bars, and boutiques were transformed into stages for LA's poets and authors. Elizabeth Nonnemaker has a story.
Dark honey of Ella's voice spills onto the asphalt.
For those who are torn between going out for a night on the town or staying in to read a good book, Lit Crawl LA offers a combination of the two. It's a mix of poetry slams, readings, and live storytelling spread among North Hollywood shops and restaurants.
I was silent. I had nothing to say.
That was Maya Trahinchik. She hopes that audiences will find an emotional connection with the poetry.
You go deeper in yourself, you know better who you are, and then you reach out to other people and you have this sense of community, this sense of sure enjoyment of the arts, and it's just fun.
Lit Crawl started in San Francisco in 2004 and has since spread to cities around the country. It's modeled off the idea of a bar crawl, but instead of one group migrating from venue to venue, there are dozens of events happening simultaneously. Crawlers can slip in and out of readings, sampling as they please. It turns literature, which is normally a solitary pursuit, into a chaotic, highly social event.
I'm a dirty romantic. I fall in love too easily with the architecture of the back alleys.
Jason Brain of the Los Angeles Poet Society wants to make LA writing more visible.
The literary form in Los Angeles is thriving. There is a budding scene of creativity here amongst writers. People need to embrace it a bit more. Everybody's a poet. That's what I'm hoping. I think people really embrace that literary side of themselves.
The Lit Crawl lasts for only one night, but the organizations involved hold literary events throughout the year. Elizabeth Nonnemaker, Annenberg Radio News.
For more on the event, go to annenbergradio.org and listen to a sound portrait of the Lit Crawl by Hillary Jackson. There's a new exhibition at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art featuring the paintings of Archibald Motley. Vanessa Williams was there to preview it.
Archibald Motley painted in Chicago during the Harlem Renaissance and depicted African-American urban life throughout his career. Lachman's exhibition is called Archibald Motley, Jazz Age Modernist. It's his first West Coast retrospective. It organizes Motley's artistic career into four sections: portraiture, Chicago nightlife, Parisian scenes, and satiric depictions of class and race. I spoke with Richard Powell, the curator of this traveling exhibition, who told me more about Motley's work.
The paintings are strong. These are works that a lover of paint goes to and you see and you say, yes, these are paintings. The subject matter in these works are just quite fascinating and really speak to his vision. He's looking at mostly the black community in Chicago in the 1920s, in the 1930s, in the 1940s. But he's not looking at them in a social realistic way. He's looking at them in an empathetic, expressive, modern way. So that scenes of nightclubs, of people sitting in the park, or people hanging out in pool rooms or churches, one really gets a sense of the spirit, of the energy, of the excitement, of the performativity of life. And I can't think of another artist from this time period who does it like Archibald Motley does it.
One of Powell's favorite works is a painting done early in Motley's career. It's called Portrait of My Grandmother. The image demonstrates Motley's skill and his affection for his relative.
This is a woman who in 1922 is close to death. She had lived as a slave in Kentucky, makes her move with her family from Kentucky to Louisiana, and she ends up living with the Motley family in Chicago. So he sees his grandmother, and he paints a portrait of her head on, looking straight out at us, with her hands in her lap, with a brooch on her chest that is black and gnarled, that has a drop of redness in the middle of it. And when I see that, when I see her hands, when I see the wrinkles on her face, when I see the apron on her body, when I see the shadow behind her, I just see this as the ultimate love painting.
Archibald Motley, Jazz Age Modernist, will be on view at LACMA until February. Vanessa Wilson, Annenberg Radio News.
Sexual violence is an increasing problem all over the world. The issue is especially important in war-torn countries, especially the Middle East. I spoke to Dr. Nimi Gaurinathan, an expert on gender and violence, who explained exactly what happens to these women and also how their experiences directly affect you and me. How are women impacted during war?
I think the common assumption is that in war zones, militias are these sort of roving bandits of men who rape, and also it gets associated, sexual violence and war, with Africa. And what, you know, you're finding is that geographically it's much broader, and that higher numbers of state military are involved in rape against civilians, either as a tool of war or as a method of domination or in showing that they control the territory. You know, women's bodies get placed in the middle of war for any number of reasons, and that is increasingly common in, you know, all of the ongoing conflicts, particularly now in Syria and other places around the world.
Why is the issue especially pertinent now?
I think, you know, one of the things we'll be discussing is a recent piece I had in Foreign Affairs about the women of ISIS, and I think that at the same time that there's been this attention by Angelina Jolie and others to sexual violence in war, you're also seeing a rise in women participating in war, female fighters, women engaged in violent resistance. So you have these two images of women as, you know, these vulnerable victims of rape or violent fighters. And so for me, it becomes important to connect a lot of these issues and to say that women being raped under spaces of repression becomes something that could radicalize them into violent movements.
As a U.S. citizen, as a woman, why should I care?
The way we treat sexual assault on college campuses, which should necessarily affect every woman on every college campus, should be thinking about it. The way that it's addressed, the way that the media picks it up, the way that, you know, the sort of various ways to blame the victim happen, those all come from the same types of repression and patriarchy that are driving the treatment of women elsewhere in the world, right?
Right.
It will affect women in the U.S., the impact on Black women of recent policies by the Obama administration to help Black men only, that's going to affect the amount of resources given to young Black women on college campuses, right?
Right.
But it all comes from the same place. It is a very patriarchal sort of structure that we're operating.
Okay. So what essentially is a way to tackle this problem? At a base level, it's affecting all of us.
U.S., you know, what we're trying to do is to get young women first to start sharing their stories. I mean, the levels of internal abuse in relationships, domestic violence. You know, I think we focus on rape because it's more shocking, but in truth, even around the world, the numbers of domestic violence are almost as high.
Thanks for talking to us, and we're really excited to have you on campus.
Well, I'm really excited to come to USC. I know a lot of the people who are coming, you know, I'm from Los Angeles, but I think it's in spaces like this that it's not really just me lecturing, but it's where you build this community of like-minded folks, you know, particularly student activism or something.
Dr. Nimi Gaurinathan is leading an open discussion tonight at 7 p.m. at the Ronald Tudor Center in room 350, where she encourages all students to attend. And now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Yes, miss. Come on. Take your time. We're at the Santi Alley's. We're at the Fashion District. The favorite part is just like how everybody gets along with each other. Everybody really knows each other.
Hi, my name is Natalie, and this is my partner, Lupita.
This good.
We sell some chills. You know, we give good customer service, and we wish everybody can come and shop here.
Now we check in with Caroline Dicely to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Chris Brown is back in court today and was ordered to participate in more community service. A local food distributor made a big donation to the LA Food Bank, and there's backlash about a new USG initiative. Find out what students are saying and much more on ATVN at 6.
Thanks, Caroline. Now it's time for our weekly Sports Minute with Evan Budrovich. This week, the Trojans are going to have to crank up the volume for a matchup on the road against the Utah Utes.
These teams are separated by just one spot in the polls, and punter Chris Albrano realizes that every little detail could make the difference between winning and losing.
So, I mean, it's absolutely critical that we really try to do the best job we can to block out the crowd noise and really get the signals in.
Utah student section, the MUS, is one of the loudest in the nation. But defensive linebacker Scott Felix feels that the noise will actually help his team get ready for battle.
I feel like when the crowd is loud, that gets us pumped up even more to just play even better. And we're all looking forward to going to Utah this weekend.
The Utah Utes come in with confidence after a big win against UCLA earlier this month. And Coach Sarkisian knows that his Trojans cannot take this game lightly.
Our energy is going to be great. You know, in that stadium and that environment, our energy is going to be great. You know, for me, our focus is what's going to be critical, and our composure is going to be critical.
The winner of Saturday night's heated contest will have control of first place here in the Pac-12 Conference. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
And in case you didn't know, today is Mole Day. No, not the cute furry animal that lives underground, but a unit of measurement used in chemistry. The mole, or Avogadro's number, is the basic measuring unit in chemistry at 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd power. It measures the amount of atoms, molecules, ions, and electrons in a substance. Mole Day was started to spark interest in chemistry at schools. Keeping with the 6.02 theme, students and chemistry enthusiasts are celebrating only between 6.02 a.m. to 6.02 p.m. today. And that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from ATVN, Nicole Hurrup, and Selena Say Reynolds. Our board operator is Lexi McAvinci. Logan Healy is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Victor Figueroa. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Priyanka Deo.